rise and proceed to case number five, please. Thank you both.
Hey, please report. I'm Jay Stevens from the Federal Community Defender Office of the Northern District of Indiana, representing Mr. Norris in this case. In fact, there are two attorneys in this case. This is one of the more unusual cases I've had in that I filed a brief relating to one issue. Mr. Norris was given leave to file a supplemental brief relating to a second issue. So I guess today I'm standing here wearing two hats. Mr. Norris asked the question, if Congress declares a sow to be a cow, then is it okay to milk it? Mr. Norris wants to address the court with the issue of, if Congress says an information is an indictment for purposes of the Federal Firearms Act, then being under indictment for the purposes of being a prohibited person includes being being under information. Now, Mr. Norris's argument is that there are substantial differences between an indictment and an information. And an indictment includes the right to a grand jury proceeding. Indictment includes...
The world is full of weird definitions. There's a definition in the Social Security Act that defines the word daughter to include grandfather. Right? Daughters get certain benefits. That just means grandfathers get benefits.
I'm not aware of that definition, Your Honor. I certainly would not put it past Congress.
And about statutory incest.
I certainly would not put it past Congress to come up with some strange definitions. And in this case, Mr. Norris contends that Congress has done so. Now, I recognize that this court's decision in Gravedon is certainly a problem for Mr. Norris. That's cited in the government's brief. And this court, in fact, held in that case that for purposes at least of the sentencing guideline enhancement for being a prohibited person, being under indictment or being under information are synonymous. This court, however, in this case is dealing with the issue of whether for the purposes of the statute itself, on the issue of guilt or innocence, the an indictment is in fact synonymous with an information under the definition that Congress has given us. And it is the position of Mr. Norris that because an indictment provides a grand jury presentation, whereas an information does not, there is an indicia at least of a potential danger of an individual under which Congress rightly so regulates the purchase or possession of a firearm. Likewise, if a person is convicted of a felony, there is more than an indicia, there is a finding.
Indicia,
yes, sir. There is a finding that the person is a danger. Gravedon deals solely with the sentencing guideline issue. Mr. Norris is asking the court to address the issue as it relates to the statutory interpretation. The second issue is the issue that I have raised, and it addresses the first four counts of conviction, that issue is, what does Congress mean by place of residence? If any place I hang my hat is home, then is place of residence the street address where I've got the hat rack standing? And our answer to that is no. Congress has defined place of residence in a number of different statutes cited in my brief.
Where does Form 4473 come from?
Form 4473 is promulgated by Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
And was it established under regulatory authority, or is it just something they made up?
It was established under regulatory authority, although Congress gave the authority to ATF to promulgate such regulations as were necessary to carry out the statute. Our position is that the form itself contains superfluous information in asking for a street address.
Well, but if the Bureau thinks it's necessary to carry out the statute, and if it has explicit rulemaking authority, why isn't that the end? And the Supreme Court keeps saying that the critical question in these administrative review cases is whether power has been expressly delegated to an agency. And it sounds like you agree that the Bureau was acting under real delegated authority.
Oh, absolutely. The Bureau is acting under real delegated authority. The problem is the Bureau has promulgated a form simply gathers information. The question is the information that form gathers material to the firearms transaction? The street address itself, although that is
possible. No, that's a different question. A lie about a non-material thing would not be a crime, even if residence meant street address. For it to be a crime, it has to be both the residence and material. You're kind of slipping back and forth between what does residence mean and is a lie with respect to residence material.
I don't believe I'm slipping back and forth, Your Honor. What I'm arguing to the court is that Congress has required ATF and through ATF the firearms dealers to collect information on the name, age, and place of residence of an individual. ATF has promulgated a form to collect that information, which includes a line to put the street address. However, the material fact in the firearms transaction are the name, because the individual must be identified in order for the information to be gathered.
It's easy to see how this information can be material, if indeed it's required. You want to know whether the person who applies to get a firearm representing himself as Harry Potter is the Harry Potter who lives on Privet Lane, or some other Harry Potter who has a felony conviction. And if somebody's going to check, you need to know which one it is. Particularly bad if the man's name turns out to be John Smith.
The problem with that, Your Honor, is the individual has the burden of establishing that he is a resident of the state in which the firearms transaction is taking place. In the state of Indiana, if a person has an Indiana firearms carry permit, he's not required to go through the normal background check that might be required if, in fact, he did not have the Indiana carry permit. Because of that, the material fact is that he has to establish that he is a resident of the state of Indiana. In this case, Mr. Norris had a carry permit and therefore was not required for anyone to find that he was the same Anthony Norris who resided at a certain address. In fact, the mobility of the American public, I think, tells us that this is not a significant matter, because while a person may be residing on that location that he puts on the firearm on the date of purchase, he can move the next day. Now, by providing a name and date of birth, those are sufficient identifiers that if someone wants to run a background check, certainly they can. But Congress has determined place of residence in many statutes to mean one's location within a political area, a state, a county for purposes of voter registration. I cited immigration discrimination not being allowed based on a person's place of residence. That's a congressional statute. Congress says place of residence. Obviously, we're not talking about whether someone lives on one street or the next street over. We're talking about where the person resides, what area he resides in. The critical factor is that Congress wants to know, first, who is the person, is he over 21, and is he a resident of the state in which the firearms transaction is taking place. Those are the things that determine whether the firearms transaction is legal or not legal.
Do you mean he doesn't have to give the address where he resides?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, he has to establish that he is the state of residence.
But I'm talking about the specific address.
Well, my position is that's not a material piece of information.
How does the department check on him to see if he does reside there? To see if this individual resides there and is carrying guns or is using guns? In other words, all he's got to do to say that he resides in Illinois. That's your theory.
As testified in the case by the two firearms dealers, Your Honor, an individual is required to produce a state identification establishing that he is a resident of the state. In fact, one of the dealers said that...
And they say that he doesn't have to give his specific address.
They did not say that, no.
Didn't think they would.
What one of the dealers said was, if his address is different than what's on his ID, put down the correct address. The other one said the two addresses have to match, but both agreed that if the person provides an in-state identification, then they would do the transaction
at a specific address
when the in-state identification is produced. The both also agreed that if a person produced an out-of-state identification, there would be no transaction.
Right.
So our position then is that an individual's place of residence, which Congress requires to be collected, is the state of residence and not the physical street address.
Is information on the form as well as indictment?
Information is on the form as well as the indictment.
And there's a place for the specific address?
There is a place for the specific address.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
If it pleases the court, Ken Hayes on behalf of the United States. I believe under the reading of the statute that is suggested by the defendant, only prohibited persons would be obligated to tell the truth about their residence. Other people, the rest of the world, could go in and lie and not violate the statute. If I wanted to go into a dealer and say my name was, pick a name, Daffy Duck, I live wherever, as long as I am a resident of Indiana and over 21, under Mr. Stevens and Mr. Norris's view, I could do that and not violate the law. I think the Supreme Court sees it differently, and I would cite the court to the final portion of my brief, where I quote from the Huddleston case, in which the Supreme Court wrote that any false statement with respect to the eligibility of a person to obtain a firearm from a licensed dealer was made subject to criminal penalty. So not only has the First Circuit in Crandall and the Fifth Circuit in Gudger, I probably am mispronouncing that name of the Fifth Circuit case, but those three courts have all come down on the side of the government in holding that the person must provide truthful information. It makes little sense to pass a statute that requires certain information.
I don't see how that answers the question, whether residence means state, county, street address. Whatever residence means, the defendant has to provide truthful information about it.
Yes, Your Honor.
So how do we know what residence means? Apparently the BATF has concluded that it means street address.
At least includes, yes, street address.
And what's the source of its authority for concluding that?
I believe the statute gives BATF authority to...
Which statute, 922 itself?
I believe it is. This is not a specific question which was brief, so I can't point to...
I understand it wasn't, but it's a terribly important question.
It certainly is.
We have a term that's potentially ambiguous. It's filled in by an administrative rule. One would therefore think the critical question in this case is the validity of the administrative rule, filling in the ambiguous term.
When the statute is read, it goes on to talk also about businesses, the identity and principal and local places of business. When I read the whole statute, when I read the statute as a whole, it seems to me very clear that it means more than simply providing the truth about a person's state, what state they live in or what state they reside in. I think it's very clear that the statute suggests or requires more. And it's particularly important in all cases, this case included,
it would be a violation of a statute. Suppose the BATF sets out a new form 4473 that just says, write down your state and county, and the applicant to buy a gun does that. At your position, you could prosecute him anyway, even though the BATF form called only for his state and county.
No, probably not, Judge.
Okay, well, then you're saying that the statute does not, all by itself, require a street address. We're just talking the validity of a regulation here.
I don't see it that way, Your Honor.
Then you had to answer my question differently. You had to say, if this defendant could be put in prison for not providing his street address, even if the BATF form did not ask for his street address. Because if residence ineluctably means street address, no one can buy a gun without providing that information. The BATF form is just a sidelight in that view. But you don't believe that. You believe the BATF form is critical.
I believe the BATF form is critical.
Exactly. So it's not the statute, but the BATF regulation that, in the end, matters.
Then it's both. Turning for a moment to the argument advanced by Mr. Norris, essentially pro se, I believe that the statute, perhaps containing unusual language and unusual definition, clearly indicates that an indictment does include an information. The BATF form specifically includes both indictment and information, and the BATF form also goes on to ask whether or not the person, whether or not the charge carries a penalty for which the defendant could receive more than 1 year. A false statement, therefore, was uttered by Mr. Norris on each of those forms from counts 15 through 28 that he was convicted of. And, of course, that decision has already been, that issue has already been decided by this court in Gevatin. Unless there are other questions from the court, I will simply ask the court to affirm the decision of the district court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will proceed to the next case, case number 6, please.